The Expulsions and Executions of the Eastern Germans, Part 3, taken from holocaustianity.com. Danzig. In 1919, after World War I, and under terms of the Versailles Treaty, the city and surrounding area formed an independent state, the Freistaat Danzig, based on the former cities Danzig and Sopot, as well as the counties Danziger Chie, Danziger Niederung and Grosses Werder. The Free City of Danzig, at this time, had an ethnic German majority of over 90% and a Polish minority of about 6%. However, the French, in an effort to destabilise the city and weaken Germany, poured large capital investments into a small settlement called Golinia, which was 25 kilometres away from Danzig and in the direct possession of Poland. Gdynia became the so-called Polish outside window. Poland stationed a squad of troops at Westerplatte, and a massive influx of Poles into the area helped Gdynia grow from a 1,000-person village to a city with 100,000 Polish inhabitants within a mere 20 years. The peacemakers at Versailles had also run the Vistula boundary between Poland and East Prussia, not in the usual fashion midway along the stream, but at a distance on the East Prussian side, creating intentional trade problems for the Germans. Old cities and towns along the way were cut off from the railroad and communities were sliced in two, where traffic, including railroads, had always run back and forth between east and west. The traffic in the north and south direction had come to Danzig along the river, and Germans were now being obstructed and harassed by tariffs. Danzig, cut off from German trade, found its Polish business being purposely diverted to the new Gdynia. The situation festered, and Danzig was absorbed once again into Germany during the Third Reich. Towards the end of World War II, Germany had started evacuating its civilians from Danzig, which ended up being 90% destroyed by Allied bombing and Red Army pillage, when in March of 1945 they seized Danzig and committed another orgy of rape, murder and robbery, finally setting the ancient city on fire. Most remaining Germans fled the city in severe winter conditions, and an astounding 70,000 Poles were trucked in to replace them by the end of 1945. After the war's end, Germans that stayed or returned to Danzig were forbidden to speak German and were considered enemy aliens. Subjected to war crimes trials at kangaroo courts, many were found guilty and hung to death in front of large stone-throwing crowds. Others suffered unspeakable terror. One group of evicted Germans was sent from Danzig in freight cars, without water, food, or room to lie down. When they finally reached Berlin, covered with excrement and vomit, 20 of the 83 were dead. They had to face verification committees packed with Polish communists, and most failed the test. 100,000 to 300,000 Danzigers had already lost their lives in the war, and in 1945 about 100,000 out of the 404,000 Germans who had lived in Danzig in December of 1944 were now dead. As in all of the new Poland, communist workers immediately set to work, erasing any evidence of the city's Germanic identity. The official propaganda reinvented Danzig into an eternally Polish city and continued to pump out anti-German hate. Danzig was transformed from a city where most people communicated in German into a city where most people communicated in Polish. Ethnically cleansed Danzig turned into Gdansk, with its history aggressively rewritten to remove any hint of its long German cultural heritage and contributions.
You're tuned in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
The stolen heritage of German Silesia. In unending succession were girls, women and nuns violated, not merely in secret, in hidden corners, but in the sight of everybody, even in churches, in the streets and in public places, were nuns, women and even 8-year-old girls attacked again and again. Mothers were violated before the eyes of their children, girls in the presence of their brothers, nuns in the sight of pupils, were outraged again and again to their very death and even as corpses. And that was the Mississippi Senator Eastland quoting from a letter he had smuggled out of Breslau in September 1945. And we'll start with a bit of background up until World War II. German Silesia was once bounded by the old kingdoms and countries of Brandenburg, Posen, Russian Poland, Galicia, Austrian Silesia, Moravia, Bohemia and Saxony. Full of rivers, streams, hills and low mountains, Silesia was also comprised of fertile pastures and meadows, and forests abundant with deer and game, tremendous fisheries and mineral wealth. About a third of the land was in the hands of large estates. The original population of Silesia was probably Celtic and other mixed ethnic groups, and the wild region did not come under the rule of a Polish king until the 10th century. Bohemian rulers actively recruited Germans to settle in the very sparsely populated area, and the entire region was soon distinctly German. Poland renounced all claim to the region, and the King of Bohemia assumed sovereignty about the year 1138, and Silesia was first transferred to the Germans at that time. The independent dynasty was drawn up under the influence of Barbarossa and two princes, who in 1163 divided the sovereignty among themselves as dukes of Upper and Lower Silesia. All of rural Silesia was covered with German settlements and German castles by the late 12th century. The rich Silesian duchies partitioned their territories with each new succession, and by the end of the 14th century, the country had been split up into 18 small bickering principalities. In 1290, the Silesian princes sought the protection of the German dynasty then ruling in Bohemia. The intervention of these kings resulted in the appropriation of several petty states as crown domains. The earliest of these Bohemian overlords, King Johann and the Emperor Karl IV, restored order vigorously. Later, however, the Bohemians involved Silesia in the destructive Hussite Wars and then in a series of invasions from 1425 to 1435, which devastated the country and put the German element of population in Upper Silesia in a weaker position, and a complete restitution of the Slavonic nationality seemed imminent on the appointment of the Hussite George Podiebrad to the Bohemian kingship in 1457. The burghers of Breslau fiercely repudiated the new suzerain, and before he could enforce his claims, he was ousted by Hungarian king Matthias Corvinus around 1469. Corvinus asserted his dominance and instituted a permanent diet of Silesian princes and tried to establish an effective central government. But the Silesians, who experienced financial discomfort at his hands, began to resent the control of the Bohemian crown, and under his successor, Vladislav, they secured a semi-autonomy, which was theirs until the outset of the Reformation, which the predominantly Catholic Silesians accepted. German King Ferdinand I reimposed the Bohemian crown upon them, and the Silesians lost power completely. From 1550, Silesia passed almost completely under foreign administration, first under the Habsburgs, which united the kingship of Bohemia with Austria and the imperial crown. The Thirty Years' War, however, brought most of Silesia to almost total ruin. It was estimated that 75% of the population perished, and commerce and industry were at a standstill. A greater measure of religious liberty was secured for the Silesians by representatives of King Karl XII of Sweden, and effective measures were taken by the Emperor Karl VI to stimulate trade between Silesia and Austria, but the country remained very poor in the earlier part of the 18th century. Silesia became part of the Holy Roman Empire and subsequently the Austrian Empire from 1526 until 1742, when it was annexed by Prussia. Despite the Seven Years' War, Frederick the Great brilliantly managed to bring sparsely populated and poor Silesia back to normalcy. He made yearly visits to the country and kept himself in touch with it, enacting numerous political reforms, including the strict Prussian enforcement of religious toleration, bringing peace at last. By judicious regulations, he brought about a dramatic increase of Silesian industries, and he revived the mining and weaving operations. He introduced Merino sheep, and the Prussians also gave Silesia its first public schools and a new, viable future. The province, the largest in Prussia, was divided into three governmental areas: Liegnitz, Breslau, comprising Lower Silesia, and Oppeln, taking in the greater part of Hilly Silesia. As late as 1905, three-quarters of the inhabitants were German, but to the east of the Oder, Poles formed the bulk of the population, with 15,500 Czechs in the southern part of the province and 25,000 Wends near Liegnitz. The capital was Breslau, the largest and most important town, which was refounded about 1250 as a German town. By the end of the 13th century, Silesia had virtually become a German land, and Breslau grew to be a leading centre of trade. Silesia was occupied by French troops during the Napoleonic Wars, and in 1815 it was enlarged by receiving back a portion of Lusatia, which until then had become detached from Silesia in the 11th century and annexed to Saxony. All that was left of Austria's part of the country after the Seven Years' War was Austrian Silesia, a duchy and the smallest province of Austria. In 1900, the population included 44.69% Germans, 33.21% Poles, and 22.05% Czechs and Slavs. It formed, with Moravia, a single province until 1849, when it was created into a separate duchy. Silesia was German and only 25% Polish when the victorious Allies hacked it up at the Treaty of Versailles, and parcelled it out between hungry nationalists from the newly endowed Poland and the newly hatched country of Czechoslovakia. Austrian Silesia suffered the same fate. Centuries of German presence, culture and history were immediately in jeopardy. Encouraged by the Allies' desire to weaken any future strength of Germany and Austria, Poles and Czechs were trucked into the German cities and towns to create a new voting majority. Even though they had been there for centuries, ethnic Germans here and in all of their former homelands began to experience violent attacks and discrimination once German protection was removed. Protests were lodged with international organisations, but they were ignored. Germany took back possession of these traditionally and historically German regions of Silesia in 1939, and this marked the beginning of new hostilities. Approximately 58,000 ethnic Germans in Poland were reported as dead or missing by 1940. When the first edition of government documents went to press on November 17, 1939, 5,437 cases of murder against men, women and children of the German minority in Poland had been reported. Between that date and February 1, 1940, the number of identified victims mounted to 12,857, and in addition to these victims, more than 45,000 persons were missing without a trace. The atrocities included murder, beatings, rape, robbery, and arson.
Tune in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
In the parts of Germany taken for Poland in 1945, the entire ethnic German population was either murdered expelled, or face severe reprisals at the war's end, as cited elsewhere in East Prussia and Pomerania, from Danzig to Stettin to Elbing, and to all of the old Baltic German cities. Catastrophic Allied bombing was followed by the Red Terror. The few surviving Germans in these areas were placed before violent communist-led verification committees who decided their fate. Their language and civil rights were immediately suspended. Thousands died trying to flee. Slave labour camps in Poland included, among those run by the infamously sadistic Solomon Morel and Czesław Gaborski, the Central Labour Camp Jaworzno, Central Labour Camp Poczulice, Lambinowice, Zagoda Labour Camp, and others. Aside from being thrown into one of these 1,255 labour camps under Polish administration in early 1945, it was estimated that about 165,000 Germans were deported to slave labour in the Soviet Union from the German territories annexed de facto by Poland. With German defeat in 1945, all of Silesia was suddenly occupied by the Soviet Red Army, who, following their violent pattern, embarked upon another horrendous spree of rape. In one instance, 182 Catholic nuns were raped in Nice, and in the Diocese of Katowice they left behind 66 pregnant nuns. Even small children were not spared the horrors of violent sexual assault, and little girls were being attacked as often as their mothers were. Boys who tried to protect their mothers and sisters were shot, as were many of the victims afterwards. Churchill proposed the genocidal plan adopted at the 1945 Potsdam Conference for putting Poland on wheels and rolling it westward into German lands. As a result of his final solution to the German problem, millions of Poles were displaced from territories granted to the USSR, and even more millions of Germans were expelled from lands they had inhabited since the 13th century. Silesian Germans, some of whom had roots in Silesia going back centuries and who before World War II amounted to about 4 million people, were collectively labelled German partisans and either fled or were murdered, put in camps, sent to the gulags or expelled. Often, the men would be rounded up from the villages and camps and marched a short distance away, shot and buried in mass graves. Under the terms of the agreements at the Yalta Conference of 1944 and the Potsdam Agreement of 1945, German Silesia east of the rivers Oder and Lusatian Nice was transferred to Poland. Poles from lands stolen by Stalin were trucked in and resettled there before the blood had even dried. The Germans were sometimes ordered to not only leave all of their possessions behind, but they were ordered to also leave the beds made with clean linen. It was efficient, well-planned, and organised. Gerhard Hauptmann's birthplace was a resort town in Silesia named Bad Salzbrunn. Fortunately for him, he died long before 1945, when he would have joined the millions of other Germans cast from their homes forever. An order of expulsion was placed upon the expellees by Communist Section Commander Major Zimbowski, and this was his order. Number 1. On July 14, 1945, from 6 to 9 o'clock, resettlement of the German population will take place. 2. The German population will be resettled to an area west of the River Nice. 3. Each German is allowed to take 20 kilos of luggage with him at the most. 4. No means of transportation, such as wagons, oxen, horses or cows, is to be permitted. 5. The total of the living and dead inventory in an undamaged state remains the property of Poland. 6. The last resettlement deadline will terminate on the 14th of July at 10 o'clock. 7. Non-compliance with this order will be punished severely, including the use of weapons. 8. Sabotage and looting will also be prevented by the use of weapons. 9. Assembly point on the street station, Bad Salzbrunn, Adelsbacher Weg, in a four-person marching column. The head of the column is to be 20 metres before the village of Adelsbach. 10. Those Germans who have a certified non-evacuation order are not permitted to leave their dwelling with their family members from 5 o'clock till 1400 hours. 11. All dwellings in the city must remain open. All apartment and house keys must be left outside. So the Germans had 1 hour, basically, in which to leave their homes. They had 1 hour just to evacuate. They had to be out within 1 hour on that morning in 1945, on the morning of July the 14th. Thousands of Breslau civilians had waited to evacuate the city when they heard news of the Soviet advance on January the 14th, 1945. They could not evacuate until 6 days later because of rail damage and battles. In panic and desperation, 50,000 to 60,000 left on foot, mostly women and children, in bitter winter weather. In the process, some 18,000 frozen bodies were recovered along their trails, and 70 children were crushed to death under wagon wheels. 90,000 Breslauers are thought to have died in the trek, partly because they realised the hopelessness of evacuating. Another 200,000 or so civilians remained in the inner city, and by February the 15th, the Soviet noose tightened around them. Breslau was the last major city in eastern Germany to fall on May the 7th, 1945. Although the city was only bombed once, massive destruction took place in the aftermath. Breslau was largely destroyed. The medieval parts of the city and almost all historical landmarks were gutted. The buildings that escaped bomb damage were burned and looted by the Soviets. It was said there was a murdered, disfigured, or disemboweled German hung from every lamppost in the city. The entire youth of Germany, boys of 14 to 17 years, and the Volkssturm, consisting of old men, were all the defence that was left during these last days of the war. These pitiful troops were all that stood between Germany and Armageddon. Over 1,000 of these brave boys arrived to defend Breslau, where they awaited the Russian onslaught. Many of the youngest of them killed themselves out of sheer terror, while others fought on desperately for days until the city finally fell on May the 6th, 1945. The 40,000 survivors of the German garrison who surrendered were executed, thrown into mass graves, or taken to the Gulag, from which few returned. Over 30,000 more civilians would die, most from homicide. But there are also about 3,000 suicides. The Red Army went house to house and block to block, embarking on vicious rape and slaughter. For 77 days, the carnage and mayhem lasted, the Soviets murdering and burning people alive. Thousands of Breslauers lay dead in the ruins, and the city was almost 70% destroyed. Like most of Silesia, Breslau was placed under Polish administration. Most surviving German inhabitants were expelled and all German property was taken. By the 1950s, Breslau had been cleansed of most of its dried blood, as well as remaining Germans and the real history of the city. Renamed Wrocław, it was resettled with Poles. It was not just adults who were expelled from their homes. Children became adults overnight, when suddenly orphaned, or when separated from their parents, and they had to face the hard and dangerous treks alone, at the mercy of the elements and vicious predators. The violence, used to obliterate the ethnic memory of Germans, was degrading and often fatal. Reduced to slaves by their new masters, Germans were forced to make public apologies for their collective guilt at social and governmental gatherings. Others were sent to camps with unbearable conditions. Of 8,064 Germans in Camp Lansdorf in Upper Silesia, 6,488, including hundreds of children, died from starvation, disease, hard labour and physical maltreatment, including torture. This repeated itself by the thousands. Illness, brought on by bad water, starvation, exposure and even poisoning, was rampant and suicides were epidemic. Five times as many Germans died in the first year after the war's end as died during 5 years of the war itself. It is interesting to note that not all Germans were expelled. In the Oppeln region in Upper Silesia, some German miners and their families were allowed to stay, but their culture was repressed and they were virtual slaves. German language remained forbidden for the next 40 years. Forced out at gunpoint, old and young, rich and poor, had to leave their family homes behind, furnished and unlocked for the new inhabitants. The Oder-Neisse, as the border of a new post-war Germany, was deceptively described as tentative until a final peace settlement with Germany. The issue was not laid to rest by Germany until it was forced to sign it as the high price for German reunification. Some or nothing at all.
You're tuned in to Radio Storm.